Well, here we are, brand new year, finally getting the show back on the road. I'll tell you, took a while to do this one. Anyway, it is January 12th, Friday. Welcome all you new listeners from all over the place. We got Art Bell and Tantalk and listeners from Texas and all over the place. Lots of new listeners. And what we're doing here is a seminar series. You can pick up the early first 3 hours of it on the archives. But you'll save yourself a lot of money if you record it off of this show or get it off the archives versus buying it, because it costs several hundred dollars to buy this series. And we left off. We were making a comparison. We were doing the history of the American political system and how it started back during the Revolutionary War and before. We covered Count Saint Germain having him sign the document, which made John Hancock get crazy when he appeared in the Boston Congress. We covered Washington, and we were doing Ethan Allen, and we were just up to the point where we were doing a comparison of the curse that was put on the presidency during Lincoln's time and was filled in John Kennedy's time, which is a series of comparisons. And I'm going to repeat that. Those of you who hear the waves in the background, it's actually 101 degrees today in Laguna Beach. And it's hot down here. It's been up and down. It's the greenhouse effect in action that we talked about. So anyway, we are going to be winding up here in about 2 seconds. And I usually oftentimes start my shows, I start in the water, because it's right down the road from me. Kind of wait around with my tape recorder and talk into it, and then I come up, and then away we go with the show. We're going to have a lot of great new guests this year, which is exciting. And it's going to be a real fun year for all of us. And we're going to get Dr. Bell here. He's going to be talking about the Lincoln and Washington comparison right about now, actually. I got to hear him walking up there and getting ready.
Lincoln was elected in 1860.
There we go.
Kennedy was elected in 1960.
This is the big comparison.
Exactly 100 years later. There are 7 letters in each name. Both presidents were killed on a Friday. Both were killed in the presence of their wives. Both were directly concerned with civil rights. Both presidents had legality of elections contested. Kennedy's secretary Lincoln warned him not to go to Dallas. Lincoln's secretary Kennedy warned him not to go to the theater. Both of their successors were named Johnson, Andrew Johnson, Lyndon Johnson. Each name contains 13 letters. Both served in the U.S. Senate. Both were Southern Democrats. Lyndon Johnson was born in 1908. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808. Booth and Oswell were both Southerners, favoring unpopular ideas. Oswell shot Kennedy from a warehouse and hid in a theater. Booth shot Lincoln in a theater and hid in a warehouse. Booth and Oswell were murdered before the trial could be arranged. Lincoln and Kennedy were carried in death on the same caisson. Booth and Oswell were born 100 years apart. Lee Harvey Oswell, John Wilkes Booth, each name had 15 letters. More than a coincidence, I would say.
A lot of people don't realize
the film that
true.
I referred to earlier is a film that's been
looking
circulating
at today. I was thinking about
some of these inner
now.
Groups, and I'm trying to get a good copy of it. And it's a videotape of the actual newscast showing the president getting shot. And when you see this film, sometimes it shows some of these different private UFO groups have it. And sometimes some of the people, the activists have it. You see it around, but you'll look in the film and you see it. You'll see that Jackie Kennedy's trying to jump out of the car during the assassination. And that means that if William Greer turned around and shot Kennedy, that would have scared Jackie enough to get her out of the car. And then the Secret Service guy throws her back in. And supposedly William Greer, who is now also deceased, used a pellet gun, which infected a poison into Kennedy's brain. Now, he did get shot from the outside simultaneously, but this was to ensure the job. But if you look at all the confusion that was going on, people really weren't paying attention to William Greer. And his brain, by the way, never was found afterwards. The body was there, but the brain was missing. It was removed somewhere during the autopsies. Anyway, going back into this initial space exploration, moon landings, during the era of the United States initial space exploration and moon landings, every launch was accompanied by an alien craft. A moon base dubbed Luna was sighted and filmed by the Apollo astronauts. Domes, spires, tall round structures which looked like silos, huge T-shaped mining vehicles which left stitch-like tracks in the lunar surface, and extremely large as well as small alien craft appear in the photographs. Now, there was a guy down in San Diego that named Fred Steckling. He's part of the George Adamski Foundation. He's wrote a book called Aliens on the Moon, and it's real interesting. You can go into that and start seeing. He's taking a lot of pictures of these different things that occurred on the moon. One thing about Fred's book, and I met Fred a couple of times, it's got some amazing pictures of objects taking off and landing on the moon, taken through some really powerful telescopes. And if you want a copy of his book, he's reached at Post Office Box 1722 in Vista, California, and his zip is 92083. And I recommend that you get a copy of that book to get into the astonishing evidence of all the alien bases on the moon. It's just totally amazing what's available out there. Then there was a book called Alternative 3, and I saw a videotape based on it. And what happened was, it talks about Bob Grodin. And let me explain something. The space program, he found out because he landed on the moon and found that there was a city up there. And he thought the space program was a farce, because it is. The NASA thing is a farce. And it's an unbelievable waste of money. It's like the WPA project. Even back when I was at NASA, we suggested this propulsion system, and Alan Holt wrote a whole synopsis on a saucer spacecraft type engine. But that was all put down. Nobody wanted to see that. And a lot of the Apollo astronauts were severely shaken by the experiences on the moon, and their lives and subsequent statements reflect the depth of the revelation and the effect of the muzzle order that followed. And the muzzle order is a pretty strong thing. We all had that when we worked there. In other words, we couldn't talk about things when I worked at NASA for 10 years after we left, because of the what they call the grace period. The astronauts were ordered to remain silent or suffer extreme penalty death, which was termed as an expediency. And this one astronaut actually did talk to the British producers to expose Alternative 3, and he was given a synonym name of Bob Grodin. I've seen videotapes on that. Maybe later on we'll have a copy of that videotape to offer too. Right now it's in confidence. It was also stated that he committed suicide in 1978, and I remember in the interview the man was totally an alcoholic, because he had seen this thing on the moon and he was trying to cover up. He couldn't talk about it. He was talking about it. He was scared to death, and he ended up dead later on. So there is a lot to this astronaut cover-up program that people aren't talking about, that have been up there in space. Now, since we've been working so much with the aliens, we began to come into possession of a technology beyond our wildest dreams. And when you see that Area 51 footage that we took, you're going to be blown away with the maneuvers that thing is doing. A craft named Aurora exists at Area 51. And this, by the way, is replacing the SR-71, and the Aurora makes regular trips into space. It is a one-stage spaceship called a TAV, Trans-Atmospheric Vehicle, and it has conventional engines in it. Then it has another stage, it has a ramjet, and then it has another stage, it's a scramjet. I've seen the technology because some friends of mine currently that I'm dealing with now work for some of these major aerospace companies that developed it. And it can take off from the ground using a 7-mile runway, go into a high orbit, return on its own power, and land on the same runway. We currently have and fly atomic-powered alien craft at Area 51, or Area S4 in Nevada, which is next door to Area 51. Our pilots have made interplanetary voyages in these craft and have been to the moon, Mars, and other planets aboard these craft. We have been lied to about the true nature of the moon, the planets Mars and Venus, and the real state of technology that we possess today is very monument. Now, the SR-71 was one that was we'd heard about in the news finally. It was finally released just about the time they retired it. They retired it back in 1990. And the reason they retired it is because, which is a whole other conversation, it was flying over Russia, supposedly, it's a stealth machine, meaning you can't see it. And while it was flying over Russia, it ended up getting shot at by a Russian V-beam technology, which is another story, which is some of the Tesla stuff using scalar waves that they've developed over there. I'm sure some of you remember the time that the Japanese airline pilot was flying a 747 up in Alaska a few years back and saw this like an atomic bomb going off and went right through the shockwave, but there was no shockwave. It was just a visual thing of this huge shockwave coming across the ocean. It was some V-beam technology that was being used. Well, anyway, the Russians shot off a 2-foot wing section of the SR-71 last year. And so as a result, it was retired, and the Aurora was put up there, which is up there now. And beyond the Aurora, we go into the Delta craft, which is like the one that crashed in 1986 up in Dulce, New Mexico. It's Paul Benowitz. Beyond that, we have some disc-shaped ships, and those we have drawings of the propulsion systems of, although I'm not presenting them in this paper. Maybe later on at a later time, I will present some of this information. In 1969, a confrontation broke out between the human scientists and aliens at the Dulce underground base. The aliens took many of our scientists hostage. Delta forces were sent in to free them, but were no match against the alien weapons. 66 of our people were killed during this action. As a result, we withdrew from all joint projects for at least 2 years. A reconciliation eventually took place, and once again we began to interact. Today the alliance continues. Now this is when the 1969, when this happened, is when the Dulce papers came out. And there were 25 pieces of paper that came filtering out by some of the people that survived and got circulated in the UFO community. And that's where the Dulce papers began. This is where the whole rumors came from, those papers, which are now being confirmed. And if you think I'm kidding about Dulce, go up there. Have your own experience, which I'm going to talk about somebody's experience in a few minutes that went up there and what happened to one of my good friends, who some of you out there are going to know because he's involved with the National Health Federation. When the Watergate scandal broke, President Nixon had intended to ride out the storm, confident that he could not be impeached. MJ-12, however, had a different idea. The intelligence community rightfully concluded that an impeachment trial would open up the files and bear the awful secrets to the public eye. Nixon was ordered to resign. He refused, and so the first military coup ever to take place in the United States was perpetuated. The Joint Chiefs of Staff sent a top-secret message to the commanders of all U.S. armed forces throughout the world. It stated, "Upon receipt of this message, you will no longer carry out any orders from the White House. Acknowledge receipt." The message was sent a full 5 days before Nixon conceded and announced publicly he would resign. When Watergate, of course, came out, everybody thought that the UFO situation was going to show up then. Once again, Nelson Rockefeller headed up the commission investigating the intelligence community. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and bam, that was covered up. Then later, Senator Church would conduct the famous Church hearings. He was also a prominent member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he only repeated the Rockefeller Act. Again, the cover-up prevailed. When the Iran-Contra hearings came along, we thought this time some truth would come out. And look how cleverly that they covered that up. As a matter of fact, the United States Attorney did not prosecute Oliver North. They hired an independent outside law firm. If you remember, when they subpoenaed for the real records, they said this is an issue of national security. So once again, it was sailed through. And it's just hard to even begin the financial empires that have been established by these groups. The amount of money that's hidden is beyond anything you can imagine. If you want to look at some of these money things, look at J. Henry Schroeder Banking Corporation, the Schroeder Trust Company, Schroeder Limited, London, Herbert Wagg Holdings Limited, J. Henry Schroeder, Wagon, Hubert, Halbert Lag Holdings Limited, Schroeder, Gerbiter and Company in Germany, Schroeder, Munchmeyer, Hangst and Company, Castle Bank and its holding companies, the Asian Development Bank, and the Nugent Hand Octopus of Banks and Holding Companies. contingency plan was formulated by MG-12 to throw everyone off the trail should they come too close to the truth. The plan was known as Majestic 12, and this was implemented with the release by some people in the UFO movement, who I'm sure some of you are familiar with. And it was supposedly perpetrated by what was called an Eisenhower briefing document. However, the problem with it was that the document lists the executive order number as 092,447, a number that does not exist and will not exist for quite a long time at the present rate. For example, Truman wrote executive orders in the 9,000 range, Eisenhower wrote them in the 10,000 range, Ford was up to the 11,000 bracket, Reagan only got into 12,000, nobody got into 92,000. Executive orders are numbered consecutively no matter who occupies the White House for reasons of continuity, record keeping, and to prevent confusion. The executive order is only one of several fatal flaws contained within the document. The plan so far has thrown the entire research community off the trail for several years and resulted in the unwanted and wasted expenditure of money looking for information that does not exist. Now, one of the worst contingency plans has been well implemented and is at work right now. For many years now, they have been importing drugs and selling them to the people, and mainly the poor and the minorities. Social welfare programs were put into place to create a dependent, non-working element of our society. Then they began to remove the social welfare programs in order to develop large criminal class that did not exist in the 50s and 60s. Look at the crime rate. They encouraged the manufacture and importation of deadly military firearms for the criminal element to use. They wanted the criminals to use these things. Like, you can get Uzis in pawn shops, you can get AR-15s, which are automatic weapons, you could get the BAR, the Browning automatic rifle, which I remember those were all over the place. This was intended to foster a feeling of insecurity that would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. And boy, wasn't that an issue back in 1990, 1989, 1988. Incidents were to be staged to speed up the process. By using drugs, hypnosis, and a process called Orion on mental patients, the CIA incalculated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and so far is working exactly as planned. Due to the wave of crime sweeping the nation, they will convince the American people that a state of anarchy exists within the major cities. They are now building their case almost nightly on TV and daily in the newspapers. And when you get in as far as I have, you can see which kinds of things are said about UFOs or whatever, and you can see which agency is behind it, because NASA, for example, has what I call the Class Cover-Up Act. And that is people like Carl Sagan and all of these people building on the CD program. The CD program, which is another document put out by the government office printing bookstore, goes into the research of what was supposedly extracted from space, which is absolutely nothing, by the radio telescopes. Yet, if absolutely nothing is being extracted from space by the radio telescopes, why did we spend billions of dollars to expand the radio telescope program? Listen to space. It just goes on and on and on. When the public opinion has been won over by these ideas, they intend to state what a terrorist group named... state that a terrorist group armed with a nuclear weapon has entered the United States and they plan to detonate this device in one of our cities. Now, you've got to realize that when I made this discovery, this was back in the 90s. Now, what a perfect time to do this, to enact this, because they're already, as of this eve, talking about beefing up security, and they're already suggesting that this is about to happen right now at this moment in time. The government will then suspend the Constitution and declare martial law. Then the secret army of implanted humans and all dissidents, which translates into anyone they choose, will be rounded up and will be placed in concentration camps, which already exist throughout the country. And it goes on and on and on to what the plans are. But in making this long story short, let me show you something else that happened here. Right along, so actually I'm going to show you two things now. Not too many months ago, on a weekend, they ran to a couple of amendments through the House and Senate on a weekend. And one was H.R. 5210, which is a public law, number 100-690, the omnibus drug bill, which dissolves the Fourth Amendment right to search and seizure. Go in there and declare a martial law, and then the government can go in. Now, alongside that, the parent bill was H.R. 4079, which gives the president the right to enact the national emergency group, which is called FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. And they can be enacted at the moment that there's a terrorist threat. Well, we're about to have a terrorist threat because of this thing, because what this country, Iraq, that we're getting ready to hassle with and have been hassling with, is noted for being the headquarters of terrorist groups. When this enactment takes place, we lose our constitutional rights, and the government can do what they want to do. And they can move right in and take over, or they can go into somebody's house and they can take them out and put them in one of these concentration camps, which they've already put together throughout the country. They're about a mile square. And who do you think they're going to put in there? The people that are resisting. So let's say that the terrorist group are going to be in San Francisco. They pull out H.R. 4079. Everybody loses their constitutional rights. They come in, they remove the people that they want out, and they throw them in these camps, get them out of the way. Then suddenly the terrorists are caught, but the people aren't out of the camps. They stay in the camps. This is what we call losing our constitutional rights. The entire operation was rehearsed by the government, the military, in 1984 under the code name Rex 84, and it went off without a hitch. When these events have transpired, the secret government and or alien takeover will be complete. Your freedom will never be returned to you, and you will live in slavery for the remainder of your life. We better do something about this. We've got to become more aware of the problems that are going on. I think that any cursory investigation by any inexperienced research will show that the members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission control the major foundations, which goes into the funding, which is supporting these things, these black box projects. All of the major commission, all of the major media and publishing interests are controlled by these same groups. The largest banks, all the major corporations, the upper echelons of the government, and many other vital interests. Now you realize they're trying to inaugurate the credit card system. That's the next big thing, the big debit system that's coming, and that's why they're handing out credit cards. Like, you could just call an 800 number and get one, even though if you have bad credit or a bankruptcy, it doesn't matter, because they want to get you on their registers so they can begin to control you. This is all part of the big program. It even talks about in the Bible when it talks about the mark of the beast. Now, I made a statement just a few minutes ago, and this will be my last for winding this part of the seminar down. We're going to get into what you can do about all this, how to take care of yourself. This is a little article entitled Prescription for Torture, and it's how a convict writer views the latest prison drug ruling, because some of these prisons, they do some experimenting on people when they turn them loose, see what they do in our society, and I'll give you an example of that in a minute. This is by Danny M. Martin, he's currently there, by the way, Federal Correctional Institution in Phoenix. On Tuesday, February 27th, the U.S. Supreme Court rekindled the convict's worst nightmare. The court, by vote 6-3, gave prison officials sweeping power to force convicts to take psychotropic drugs against their will. The ruling may have played well on the street, but it cast a dread over the feelings of many of us convicts. To those of us who watched convicts being plied with drugs that made them total zombies, the decision was maddening. It is true that some convicts need to be medicated, but we have seen others who don't need the drugs being forced to take them by incompetent and tyrannical bureaucrats. Justice Anthony M. Kennedy, writing for the majority, said, given the requirements of a prison environment, the state may treat a prison inmate who has a serious mental illness with antipsychotic drugs against his will if the inmate is dangerous to himself and others, and treatment is the inmate's best medical interest. I'm going to skip a little bit here. If the drugs we are talking about are sometimes used in here as exquisite forms of long-term torture, some of these mind and body paralyzing chemicals are pyroxene, Haydol, and Thorazine. They are brand names for a class of major tranquilizers based on the drug phenothiazine, which is widely prescribed for schizophrenia and other severe mental illnesses. Such is the power of these drugs that I have seen men do things under their influence that almost defy description. One man on an antipsychotic drug at the Lompoc Penitentiary climbed a row of deadly razor-sharp wire, oblivious to the danger, and got hung up in the wire about halfway up. Another guard fired a warning shot. He was then hauled off the wire by other guards. He was so much so high that he wasn't even aware he was being cut. Another convict who comes to mind is murderer Gary Gilmore, the subject of the Norman Mailer book, The Executioner's Song. Gilmore was once strapped to a bunk in the Oregon State Prison for 5 weeks during the early 1970s and injected with massive doses of Prolaxin, according to another convict. A man who was there at the time told me that after the ordeal, Gilmore completely lost his sense of humor and became extremely morbid. All this was several years before the savage murders for which he was ultimately executed. In closing, in this section of the tape series, I just want to say that the man that wrote this, and there's a lot of other articles if you want to pursue what goes on in prisons, Danny M. Martin is a convicted bank robber who has written frequently for Sunday Punch. He is currently at the Federal Correctional Institute in Phoenix, where he has transferred after writing an article about rising tensions at the Lompoc Penitentiary in California. Now, in the next phase of this, we're going to start talking about the mind-body-spirit relationship of the human body. And I'm going to go into what I have learned from the good guy extraterrestrials. I read to you and explain to you over and over throughout this first opening series what's going on behind on the bad side, and I always like to present that to get it out of the way because I really want to take off and have some fun. So far, and I've also covered the Global 2000 report and some of its ramifications as to what it means to us. I've shown you where the agencies put the 2000 report, how they were originally. We've seen a political intertwining of agencies. We've talked about the malathion spraying. We've talked about the depopulation policy. We've shown you how that intertwines with the UFO and extraterrestrial cover-up and how the alien intelligence has gone in and used human body parts to further their research on the humans as well as using them for food. And, of course, our government, seeing as they're all tied together, I'm referring now mostly to our secret government, which is well documented at this point in time. And so obviously it's very easy for the for them to begin to plot the demise of a large portion of our population. Also, we talked about a little bit about the helpful aspects of it. And once you understand what you're dealing with, then it's quite easy, of course, to reverse the energy. Now, it's not just the dark side of forces that are here, too. It's also the white forces are here. But the white forces will begin to help us, the Brothers of Light, the friendly extraterrestrials, and there are several of them that are here, once we begin to help ourselves. Their help would be of no value to us if we're not aware of, first of all, how the game is being played, where the borders of the game are, and who the players are. And up until now, I've found that most people that I've spoke to in the health fields and New Age fields and different areas where I've gone really aren't aware of the overall ramifications and do not have a very clear, what I would call, high-level or altitude view of what's really going on. Now, I'm going to continuously refer back to some of the things that I've already covered. I won't refer back so much specifically to the things covered as we move on, but I will be referring to other things that have to do with these different agencies, other policies that I haven't mentioned. And if you have any questions or anything to yourselves, I would advise you before going on from here is maybe go back and review this material a time or two. It doesn't hurt to be well informed because the further we get into it, the more sense it's going to make. And like I say, you want to share this tape with your friends. You're welcome. Feel free to duplicate parts of it, even though it is a copyrighted piece. It's here not for the purpose of making money. It's here for the purpose of sharing information. And I hope that I've given you enough information. I've given you the location and centers of the Global 2000 offices. I've given you different documents to refer to. I've given you the name of the EIR review phone number in Washington, D.C., where you can get more information, and you can even subscribe to some of the publications that I get my information from. It just goes on and on. There's plenty of groups and agencies that are together, that are out there, people like ourselves banded together to find out more and to do something about it. So there's plenty of information here just to begin with. Now, as I get into this next phase, we're going to start talking about four different bodies of energy. Now, the physical body, which we're well aware of, has to do with biochemistry. We're going to talk about vitamins and nutrition and things that have to do with that. We're also going to be dealing with the body that directs the physical body, which is called the etheric body. The etheric body is visible through certain kinds of dyes. It's a electromagnetic field that hovers or moves about the physical body. And then, of course, we're going to get into the astral body, which is the emotional body, which is even in the interdimensional. It's moving beyond the speed of light, and it directs the energy down to the etheric body through the planes. And we're going to go through the doorways of these different bodies into one, from one into the other. I'll just give you a little bit of information here. If I was treating a disease, for example, and this disease, let's say everybody had a sore throat. I had 10 patients, and they all had sore throats. If I treated all 10 of them with one means, the biochemical means, which might mean using antibiotics, might mean using vitamins, it might be using nutritional means, I might only get a response of 2 or 3 people.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.
Now we're going to go to the next tape. That's going to be a given. I'm glad you're following along with this, and we're back on track from where we kind of got goofed up in the middle of December. As you listen to my shows, after listening to this, my current live shows on Saturday night, you're going to find that this material, this is before the internet, by the way, and that's kind of neat. And so now with the internet in place, you can get a lot more information. People keep asking me about the Global 2000 reports. You can get that on Amazon. It's been reprinted by several different companies. And this is just so exciting now to lay this background. Now, this was originally done in 1991, so it's being updated, obviously, as we go along. But and I've actually interjected some new readings in that in some of the earlier places. But this is the Volume 4 tape, the fourth episode of this, and you can pick it up on the archive. So we are going to now roll into the final half hour of this Friday, the January 12, 2007 show. And here we go. There's the birds. Can't beat a good bird. Love those birds. I recognize that bird, actually. Hey, bird.
But if I back up towards the etheric level, just below that, and go into the electrical levels of the body, at electroetheric levels, start using negative ionization and some other types of things that are available now using the science of electricity on the body, because electricity directs the cell flow or the electrical cell flow. This causes biochemical things to happen. Ionization takes place within the cell structures, causing chemical changes. So if I use the electrical process on people, including ionization, I would probably get a 50% response, or 5 people would respond to their sore throat or cold or whatever. However, if I would back up one more time and go into what's called the astral and higher etheric levels, we would get into a device known as electrical precursation. Now, electrical precursors means this series of parameters are set up on the electroetheric level or up on the astral level or the emotional level. If these devices or these criteria are met, what happens is it's going to cause change down the biochemical levels. And this is these types of devices that work on these levels are things like our nuclear receptor, the special pyramids, the 4 or 5 different pyramids that we've developed at Pyridyne over the years. And a lot of the bigger grid structures that we'll get into further on work on these levels and levels even beyond that. Another thing that happens is that when people are abducted, oftentimes they don't have memory of being abducted by these negative aliens, these grays. And when they are finally hypnotized or something triggers a result inside the body, they suddenly have memory of what this was all about. This is another area that we're going to address. Also intertwined with all this is a theory of life extension, because a long time ago we lived longer. For example, the subjects of life extension, immortality, have been the folly of the human race since time began. The ancient Greeks sought the perfect elixir for everlasting beauty. The Egyptians developed a way to preserve their bodies for centuries, which was really interesting. They would take the tannic acid and embalm it into the body and put it inside the pyramid field. And being the pyramid field, being an etheric field, would cause a preserving effect to occur throughout the body. Even today, if you took a bunch of flowers, for example, and hung them upside down, like say you had this bouquet from a wedding or some festive event, and you want to preserve this bouquet for years and years and years, what you could do is turn it upside down, hang it inside of a pyramid, and let it dry out in there. Because the pyramid puts a protective field around it, it would dry out, and there would be no bacterial attacks on it, because the pyramid would prevent the bacteria from causing this effect. The sap would run down into the flowers, and you would end up, after a few weeks of it drying out, a perfectly preserved, very bright floral bouquet, which you could spray a little clear lacquer on that would last for 200 or 300 years. Ponce de Leon discovered and named Florida after looking for the Fountain of Youth in 1513, almost 500 years ago. Till today, even still, pilgrims go to different lands to find the answer. As a matter of fact, King Philip right now, his arm injury, is going to the old fountain over in England, which many people believe is where the chalice, this is the chalice well, and they believe that cup that Christ drank out of is still there, and he's getting water from that to treat on his arm even today. So I mean, it's very, very real to a lot of people. I know that many of my friends also have traveled as far away as Tibet in search of truth for everlasting life. Betty Lee Morales spent a lot of years over there with the Hunzicut people, and they live a long time. And they, one of the things in their diet, by the way, was the apricot kernels, which contains laetrile, which we'll get into a little later on. Then we hear a few rumors of the chosen few who were successful in adding a few years to their terrestrial walk. Methuselah, for example, supposedly lived about 650 years back in 600 BC. In more recent times, Count Rzowski, which is known as Count Saint Germain, Transylvania, near Hungary in the Carpathian Mountains, was living over 200 years in a middle-aged body during the time of Marie Antoinette. Madame D'Amar kept a diary of his activities, which is in the British Museum today, even in London. Saint Germain had been documented by several reliable sources to have been active in the European politics from 1710 to 1860, which is a pretty good long lifespan, I would say, for a politician. The famous author Madame Blavatsky wrote of an Eastern gentleman, Mahatma Maurya, who was a Rajput prince, who was over 200 years old when she met him in 1851 with Queen Victoria of England. During the ensuing 40 years she spent with him, he never appeared to age. In more recent times, there is a man among us now named Robizar Tars, who is 500 years old. It appears to be in his late 40s and has spent some time with a gentleman named Paul Twitchell. He's even, as a matter of fact, he was even said to have formulated some of the many exotic vitamins that combine the use of spirulina, herbs, enzymes, and amino acids that are on the market today. So this just gives you a little idea. Now, if you get into the actual, those of you probably are aware of that are listening out there now, that we have a couple music albums out. And in one of our albums that we did, which was called Atlantis Rising, it starts out underwater a long time ago, with the DNA wars. The DNA wars were something that started back when the black priests of Atlantis had sold out to the negative extraterrestrials known as the Greys. And this is a thing that's even happened today. It was a repeat of something that happened a long time ago, because before, 12,000 years ago, the human race lived an extremely long time. But when they sold out for some more technology, what happens is we ended up getting a long-term effect on the human body, and we began to get a shortening of the lifespan. Now, my newest contact lady that I'm working with now, Liara, is teaching us how to cause the DNA to stop despiraling and to start winding up and giving us a chance to go back into longevity, which is some of the tapes series that we're working on now are going to deal with these problems and the solutions. But we must all realize that in the process of going back, these bodies that we're in now we might get another 40 or 50 years out of them if we start practicing these techniques, but we're going to readjust the vibratory and DNA structure so that we can give and pass on longevity to our children, and our children might live an extra 50 years, so their children might live to be 200 years old, and then their children might live to be 300 years old. It's going to work more this way, realistically. Now, realizing how the soul incarnates and we have this continuity of consciousness, I still remember my past life, the one immediately before this one. I've got tremendous memory of it. This becomes a gift then, and it is something we can work with. You actually have to earn it, but it becomes easy after a while. So by increasing our own personal longevity and that of our children's and our children's children, we'll in turn, when we come back as one of our children's children ourselves, we'll come back with memory of this whole experience, and this will enhance the entire human race. That's why we're going into these kinds of studies now. And we've got to realize sort of where we're starting. We must realize that most of society's ideals are based on greed, and as a result, we live in total contradiction with nature. For example, on the Pleiades, they live differently. They don't have sirens going down. You don't hear all this roar of jets taking off and landing in the airport. Roar of freeways. They don't have that. Body, souls, and spirits are composed of a life force that seeks perfect harmony with the surrounding universe. When this balance is achieved by perfect synthesis, we are truly immortal. But today, our bodies seek bare existence. I mean, we're just trying to survive. Our minds quest for a perfect thought, and our souls and spirits only wish for a perfect union of a brotherhood of one man, one woman, or one child. That's all we're trying to do, is just survive and keep our families together. So we've got to go inside ourselves and go beyond that. And that's what we're going to attempt to do now. First thing we should look at or address is the human aura. Now, a lot of people wonder what the human aura is. The human aura is a summation of fields that exist around the human body and changes all of the time. It's not a static thing. It's something that's very dynamic, very changing. The human aura is polarized to the north and south pole. And you can imagine that. Look at it as a human being as a magnet walking around, a vertical magnet. And the North Pole, of course, would be in the top part of the body, and the South Pole would be in the bottom part of the body. The North Pole is centered in the third ventricle of the brain. There are seven ventricles in the human brain. And the bottom part of the human aura is concentrated around the base of the spine. Now, if you were to take an electrical wire, an ordinary long piece of wire, just imagine a piece of wire the size of a clothesline or something, and you were to take this wire and stretch it out over a period of a small distance, say 5 feet, and hook it to a battery. And what you would do is hook one end of the wire to the positive pole of the battery and the one end of the wire to the negative pole of the battery. So just imagine this clothesline hooked to a battery. Immediately there would be electricity when you connected the two poles of the battery across the wire. There would be electricity moving through the wire, causing a short circuit over the battery. And this, of course, would cause current to flow. At right angles to this would be electromagnetic energy. Now what would happen is if you would reverse the polarity of the battery, in other words, connect the positive side and the negative side of the wire to the opposite sides, so the positive end of the clothesline is now the negative, and the negative end of the clothesline is now the positive, the field would stop while you disconnected the battery, and then when you reconnected the battery in the opposite direction, the current would flow in the opposite direction, the magnetic field would be polarized in the opposite direction. So you now have a reverse magnetic field. The body is the same way. You can imagine that there are 72,000 different wires extending from the base of the brain down through the spinal cord, distributing themselves all throughout the muscles, all through the organs of the body. And this, of course, is the electrical field conductor of the body, the nervous system, because the nervous system is 100% electrical. The brain, which I'll talk about in a while, produces electricity that, through different galvanic actions and responses of emotions and thoughts in the brain, sends out different frequencies and vibratory energies throughout the spine. The summation of this field is, of course, the aura field, because you get a magnetic field repeating itself down these 72,000 major wires in the body. And along with, there are many, many thousands of smaller nerve wreaths in the body that create smaller, more minute magnetic fields. That's why it's important to realize that magnetic fields do have an effect on the human body. Now, going back to the analogy once more of switching positive, switching negative, the poles of the battery across the clothesline, during the time that it took to disconnect the battery across the clothesline and reconnect it in another direction, this would be called a switching time or polarizing time. And if you were to be switching the battery very fast, let's say in 60 times per second, if you were to switch the polarity of the clothesline across the battery 60 different times in the period of 1 second, you would have a field going through the clothesline of 60 cycles per second, or 60 building and collapsing of this field. This is, would be called alternating current, because you're alternating currents through the field, through the magnetic switching action of the battery through the clothesline. The brain is the same way. The thinking process is constantly switching positive and negative in the brain all the time at a rate determined by your thought process. This can be a harmonious rate, or this could be a disharmonious rate, depending on the family of frequencies or family of time characteristics that we're switching with. For example, if you're switching at, let's say, at 440 cycles per second, that's the musical note A, that's a harmonious vibratory switch. If you're switching at a lower frequency, for example, 7.5 hertz, you're switching with a frequency of gravity. If your frequency of switching in the brain is 3.5 hertz, for example, you're switching at the frequency of blood. There are a whole series of characteristic curvatures of frequency switching within the human brain, which has to do with the frequency of the vibratory energy of the human aura, or the magnetic shifting frequencies around the human body. So the aura is somewhat complex. Getting into it on a little bit deeper level now, and break down the... on a deeper level, we can break down the actual switching frequencies to three different nervous systems. For example, the lower, more pragmatic switching frequencies, which would be almost DC, direct current, which is no switching at all, just current moving in one direction, all the way up to about 18 hertz, which is the frequency of muscle operation. By the way, you can think of these as the beta, alpha, delta, theta frequencies. If you're switching down around 2 or 3 hertz, you're in a very deep meditative state, and you're switching into other dimensions, as well as what your mind would be, as well as switching on the physical plane. And so these characteristics could be noted at through different nervous networks. The first nervous network that we would look at would be the autonomic nervous network. The autonomic nervous network is the subsystems of the body, the breathing, the heartbeat, things that you don't think about. If you have a starvation in that area, this part is going to function very poorly. Now, as I've clearly stated, that the body is 5% minerals, and the body is 5% minerals, controls 95% of all metabolic functions. The first prime frequency of the body, minerals, would be the iron, the copper, and all these kinds of things. It's necessary to have these in our diet. We have, at Paradigm, long since been developing special kinds of minerals to go in the human body in the diet, because if you don't have them in there, this part of the body is not going to function. For example, iron. We put large amounts of iron. We use a chelated iron. And it's necessary to use a chelated iron in the body, because if you just stick an ordinary iron supplement in the body, you're probably not going to get the total wondrousness of it. When you ingest minerals into the body, they are electronically assimilated and distributed to all the brain synapses and nerves in the body. And you could say that the minerals are working on three different levels of vibration, or octaves, in the body, producing three very distinct behavioral characteristics. And of course, the first category we've already gotten into, which is the autonomic or self-governing nerve response. Primary ones in there, besides iron, would be calcium, magnesium, copper, zinc, and manganese. These minerals become hemoglobin in the blood, bones, and basic structure. The second range of the minerals is the mid-spectrum of the mineral kingdom. These are said to be reflective of nature, literally echo or ring throughout the body. This band of vibrations works, by the way, through the sympathetic nervous network, and is responsible for sensations such as hunger, pain, excitement, as well as governing our regulatory action of the body. Thought itself is influenced by these minerals, with thoughts such as, hello, it's a nice day, I need to go to the store. Chrome, silver, and nickel are in the reflective category. Now, one thing I like to note is that chromium is probably one of the most reflective of all mid-range minerals, as you see it everywhere on cars, at least you used to before they started putting in automobiles. You know, applications along on the bumpers, and you see the silver on the mirrors and that. Chromium stimulates the activity of enzymes involved in the metabolism of glucose for energy and the synthesis of fatty acids and cholesterol. Chromium also appears to increase the effectiveness of insulin, thereby facilitating the transport of glucose into the cell. Here's where the glucose tolerance factor tests that are coming, that you probably take them sometimes to check if you're hypoglycemic or not. Without GTF, by the way, chromium insulin cannot effectively control the metabolism of carbohydrates, resulting in excessive levels of circulating insulin, temporarily abnormally high levels of blood sugar, followed by reactive hypoglycemia. You know, as the body becomes more depleted by these imbalances, diabetes eventually develops. In fact, many of the early diabetes cases are characterized by excess levels of insulin and low levels of GTF chromium. Now, one of the things that I've found is that when you go into a disease condition, the first thing in your body, besides vitamin A, usually the first vitamin that you're deficient of in a disease condition is vitamin A, along with vitamin C. Usually A, because A is the immune system with protection in the first place. And the first mineral that you're deficient of is chromium. So in the treatment of disease, the first thing you'd want to do is put chromium back in the body. And it's incredibly important because of this reflective thing, because the body cannot digest proteins into the body properly without a reflective reverse of energy, which I'll talk about later on when I get down into the pre-nuclear devices, including the nuclear receptor. In the blood, chromium competes with iron in the transport of protein. Chromium may also be involved in the synthesis of protein through its binding action with the RNA molecules. Now we go up into the next nervous system, and this is the high frequency. The high-frequency minerals are usually referred to as trace minerals, or rare earths. These are minerals such as vanadium, gold, titanium, and all these kinds of things. These, too, are also found in nerves. The nervous network that correlates with these minerals is called the parasympathetic nervous network. Sometimes we call it the vagus nerve, or the psychic aerial. Types of thinking related to these minerals being present are thoughts of God, ecstasy, clear meditation, which we're going to do later on, calmness, psychic or intuitive flashes, and a oneness with the universe. Trace minerals ensure perfect timing of the uptake, absorption, and release of hormones and neurohormones at the receptor and effector sites within the human brain. In general, they fine-tune our systems for greater utilization of all body chemistry, in which in turn gives us the most precise attunement and harmony with our present surroundings, whether we accept or reject them, or where we are in the present moment. If we find ourselves rejecting where we are, trace minerals will help us remain calm until we analyze what we must do and connect the present moment and transmit into something more desirable. Just to remember this, if you really want to appreciate the importance of minerals, when you finally pass on to higher existences, our bodies return to the earth again and again. The mineral kingdom acts as a neurotransmitter not only to the DNA helix in man, but also to the DNA helix or equivalent in all things composed of matter on the material planes. The Akashic Records, for example, which is the records of all actions of man, nature, and true functioning of all things that have been in the past, are registered in the mineral kingdom. Through practices of exercise and meditation, coupled with proper nutrition, it is possible to know all things spontaneously as you live a life of self-respect. Minerals are also responsible for the proper switching speeds of synaptic vesicles located in the receptor and effector sites of any animal, including humans, that have any sort of brain. This is true down to the even basic cell. In the center of all cells is a portion called the nuclear membrane, which specifically guides all actions of growth and reproduction within the cell itself. Our soils have long been stripped of their mineral content, and once removed, it literally takes centuries to replenish and restore a fine natural mineral balance. Vegetable and plants can only have minerals when they are present in the soils, and this, by the way, is nature's way of chelating them. And this is where we get them from, to put them into our mineral formulas. We use specially enriched soils, and then we harvest those plants, and we put those plants into the vitamins themselves. And so to ensure the proper amount of mineral, supplementation is now very necessary. Those of you that are going into any kind of a life extension or consciousness raising will need to accentuate heavily on trace minerals, as they have a levying effect on the despiraling of DNA, which I will be getting into presently. Now, we have two types of trace minerals available. One is what we call our turbocharged ion minerals, which are specially developed for us by John Anderson of Integrated Health. And these are special formulas where we use ginseng, which I'm going to get into also in a few seconds. The other form of minerals that we use is another form came from the Great Salt Lake, which we use as a trace minerals in our other formula, the XL Plus. Now, they work together. However, the ones in the XL Plus don't have the kick or zap to them as do the ones that we're using in the Turbo Ion Min, because the Turbo Ion Min ones are only they're coming from a 2,000-year-old fossil bed up in the northern part of the United States, and when we check them with the aura photography and that, you'll see a huge electrical field around them. And we use a deionized water process, which means that the ionization potential and the mineral itself will come out and be present in the liquid solution that you take them in. A lot of times people actually get shocks when they drink our minerals because they're so powerful. We also use an octahedral charging device, which balances the negative ionization, what we call the charge negative ion, which I'll get into also later on, versus a regular negative ion, which is very important for assimilating them when you get into superconscious work. When people train to become ET contactees, or they train to become superconscious, or be able to be telepathic, or be great channelers, it's very necessary to use the parasympathetic nervous network and to have it fully fueled. In our environment, which is high stress, high ELF, high radiation, high pollution of every sort, it's constantly causing us to run out of these minerals, and most people in their normal food supplies and meals and that cannot get them. Now, when we look back at the human aura frequency, all of these minerals have to be present in the brain to synapse or fire off the charges in the brain which send these electrical fields. And the human aura is another thing we should look at in the fact that it basically determines our personality. For example, if you're eating bad foods and you're breathing bad air, which is highly polluted with fossil fuels, discharges, all these kinds of things, your aura frequency is going to be relatively low. And for example, going back to the clothesline analogy, if I had a clothesline present and I was putting electricity through it via a battery, and I had another clothesline, say 5 feet away, that was parallel to it, say I had 2 50-foot clothesline, for example. I had one of them with a battery across it. The other one doesn't have anything across it. The one that doesn't have anything across it will have electricity in it as soon as I energize the one next to it with the battery. Why is this? Because of a thing called mutual induction. The magnetic field is present in clothesline A with a battery. The magnetic field, even though it's invisible to the human eye, is quite measurable with electronic instruments, will transfer itself over to the second clothesline. The second clothesline will also have a magnetic field around it. Well, if you put a magnetic field through a piece of iron that has any distance to it, like wire, automatically you have an electrical current that's going to move through there. This is a process of mutual induction. By the same process, for example, if you have one human being in a room with a very powerful aura field, positive, let's say, and you have another human being in the same room with an aura field that's also positive, the greater field will charge the lesser field up and make it balance out. So the second person is being influenced by the first more so than the first person, because his aura field was stronger in the first place. That's why people are attracted to very positive energy people, or even it could be negative. You could have a negative field and you could attract somebody negative to your field. It doesn't matter how it works. What I'm saying here then is that the personality has an influence on other personalities. And if you get a group of people, for example, with a certain personality determined by their environment, you end up with a group personality. So therefore you could have a very positive group personality, like say when I do my seminars, I have a bunch of people in the room. After an hour or two, the people are all, when they first arrive, the seminars have aura fields polarized by all different walks of life from all the different locales that they come. Sometimes people come from all over the world to one of my seminars. And so I have a whole mixture of people. And when the seminar first starts off, everybody's a little bit confused. Everybody's a little apprehensive. Everybody is this. Everybody's that. They're not sure what it's all about, but they're there. Within an hour or two, the first thing we do is balance the aura fields out, and we get everybody on the same frequency. So we end up with a sum total group frequency or group vibratory level. This then makes everybody a lot more receptive to their own internal guidance, and we bring or externalize this internal guidance into the seminar and in the way we go. And this is why everybody learns. And they're learning things that they already know anyway.
Well,
which
I know
is really
we have a lot of funny with that, but...
Plus then I'm able to direct in things that might guide them.
We're running out of time for today. And we're going to continue on with that, of course, next Friday. You can count on it. You can make a book on that baby. We're going to do it. So anyhow, thank you once again, all you new listeners. Thank you, my supporters at Voice of Tampa Bay, Tan Talk, 1340 and 1400 AM. And we'll have some fun. We look forward to great shows on Saturday nights. That new feature that we've got up on the front page where you can email me during the show, and I'm monitoring that. I can email or speak live to you back. That way you can answer your questions. We were flooded last Saturday night, which was the 6th, January 6th. So once again, we're not doing the Hot Rod to Hell during the tape series, but we'll be doing that on Saturday night. And by the way, email me at fredbell@paradigm.com. Give me a couple of paragraphs on why you have a suggestion. Who you should send to hell. You know, we like to send people to hell. Companies, not exactly individuals, I don't go for that, but groups, you know, people that run and make stupid decisions, things like that. That's where we want to go with this. I don't want to personally insult anyone because we're all a little bit stupid, including me. But when we, you know, what's the definition of insanity? And that is trying to do something over and over and getting the same result and still continuing to do it over. Talk to you soon. Back out of here. Dr. Bell's Health Science and Energy Show.